The Natural Nurse with Ellen Kamai and Dr. Z, Mondays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you so much for calling, for joining us today right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you're here with host Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can always find out more at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And we love to hear your comments, questions, suggestions about what you'd like to learn more about right there at Facebook, The Natural Nurse. Today, we are very happy to have as our guest Swami Naranya Tirtha, also known as Cowboy Swami Shaman. Swami became a monk in 1990 and spends a portion of each year serving indigenous communities in the Himalayan and Andes mountain regions of the world. He is the author of several books, including the very well-known Ayurveda Encyclopedia. In fact, the second edition has 20,000 copies in print. And the Bhagavad Gita for Modern Times. Also, his newest book, 21 Days to Freedom. He founded an ashram or monastery and has spoken at the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine, Johns Hopkins Universities, and other universities and many, many radio shows. He is on the board of advisors of Light on Ayurveda Journal and has accepted the lead role as Ayurveda expert for AltMD.com, whose vision it is to bring unity to the CAM community. Swami has been recognized as a Swami and also a shaman, and he offers readings to help people understand their life transformations, health, and life purpose as we head into this new age. He is the founder of the School of Ayurveda, offering Ayurveda certification programs, and also has a herbal product line which he has developed based on ancient Ayurvedic remedies. Thank you so much for joining us today, Swami.
Howdy, Ellen. It's great to talk with you again.
Well, you certainly have been on a major adventure for these many, many years. And it seems that you just keep evolving.
One adventure after the other, yeah. I mean, it's like the honeybee. As soon as the nectar dries up, go on to the next flower.
And, you know, so many things. When I'm looking at your website right here, peaceandparadise.com, and you have many websites, but I'm looking at that one, and you do so many different things. For instance, you're having a trip to the Amazon.
Yes, that's an offer just before the 2012. It'll be the last Amazon trip we can do before 2012, so it's a once in every 26,000 year lifetime opportunity.
That's right. Now, that's something you've been focusing on, and many people have been talking about as we certainly move quickly into the year 2012. And the Mayan calendar, what kind of readings have been gleaned from that?
Well, people ask, you know, a lot of even at this date, after so much real information has come out, people still say to me, I hear the world is going to end. Is that really true? And it's just the furthest thing from the truth. Last year, right after the 2010 New Year, I got the vision that 2012 is a paradise. 2012 will be the paradise, and it already began for those who opened up their invitations and earlier than that. Last June, I was in Guatemala for the summer solstice, and the head Mayan there said, you know, all these people are writing books about the 2012 Mayan calendar, but none of them are Mayans. He says, if you want to know what's happening in 2012, ask a Mayan. And I'm a Mayan, he said. And he said, what's going to happen in 2012 is it's going to become a celebration life. And so he just validated my own personal visions, and many, many people I'm sure you've talked to many like that who are getting those visions that this is a time for paradise, hence my website, Peace in Paradise.
Well, more than hints, actually, Swami, I myself was very interested in this topic and still am. So I traveled to the place where Mayans still live in their ancient culture, outside of in Mexico, and near the Chichen Itza area where the ancient pyramids are. And there are still Mayans there. In fact, I tracked down very old Mayans who don't even speak Spanish.
Right.
I myself speak Spanish, but I don't speak Mayan.
Right.
So I had to find their children who were, let's say, 40 or 50 years old that were able to speak both Mayan and Spanish.
Wow.
And they interpreted for me. And they actually told me the exact same thing that you are sharing with us right now, Swami.
Oh, that's so great to hear that validation.
Yes, and one of the things they said, even for those of you who don't understand Spanish, the word rodondo means round. So the Mayan elder told his, his grandson, actually, who then spoke to me, that don't you all see that the calendar is round? It's a round tablet. And that symbolically as well as specifically indicates a cyclic nature.
Yeah.
So although there's sort of a coming to the end of a specific cycle, it just automatically flows into the next cycle. There's no falling off the edge.
Our calendar ends December 31st.
You mean every year?
Every year.
Every year, exactly. So what they said, what they also told me is, of course, they're very remote and they don't have cell phones or TVs or anything, but they said that they know that a lot of this hoopla is about the fact that several books were written, in particular at the beginning, José Argüelles wrote a book many years ago, The Mayan Calendar, and started to describe this ending cycle, and then newer authors have just taken off on that. Of course, it's a money-making venture as well.
Yeah, yeah. And fear sells, fear sells.
Exactly. And we see that everywhere. So you're a proponent that...
Fear sold in the past. This is a new era. It won't sell anymore.
Well, that's a beautiful indication. So according to both your own inner vision...
Yeah.
As well as the research that you've done,
right.
You don't think everybody should prepare for the end times right now.
I think the hardest thing in the world these days is to not feel guilty about living your joy, living in celebration, and that's what the preparatory work is now. And for those who are suffering, it's because they're clinging to the old paradigm. And for those who are opening up and learning how to listen to their hearts and their intuitions and connecting to nature and community, those are the people that are having, those are the people at the party right now. So, I think we want to prepare for the celebration by living more of it as much as we can in any given moment.
And I think that's a very important point, Swami, which you have taught for so many years about that moment, not about planning, okay, well, if we survive through the Mayan calendar day, then we can start feeling good, or whatever your personal focus is, like after I get this car, then I can feel good,
right.
Rather than just experiencing joy in every moment. It's not that easy.
Culturally, we've been brought up this way. Our ancestors, for all the things that they did go through, they tried in their love to protect their descendants by saying, be careful of this and be careful of that. But it doesn't work anymore. We've been blessed, divine spirit, God, nature, Pachamama, however you want to describe it, has literally just lifted us up out of all that stuff and said, okay, it's time for a break. It's time for a picnic. And it's going to be a nice long picnic. And if anybody, it's your definition of paradise. Paradise means to you, that's what it is. It's not everybody's going to do one thing in paradise. So if you love the beach, you can move to the beach. If you love the mountains, go live in the mountains. If you love singing, go sing. If you love mathematics, do something with math, enjoy the life. Enjoy what comes to you. Because it's coming, and the only suffering is when we're blocking the mana that's flowing on us from heaven.
Now, what about when people say, in terms of looking around at the planet and seeing, you know, we have, let's just talk about the United States. I know you do a lot of work in India.
Yeah.
But even in the United States, I have been traveling and seeing that there are many tent cities.
Wow.
All over the United States. And these are people who are not drug addicts and people who haven't tried to live a clean kind of life. They are working people who have lost their jobs, lost their homes, they have children, and they're living in a tent.
Right.
And this group is growing tremendously. Now, what about when we look around and see that kind of devastation and environmental pollution and all the earth changes and climatic upheavals that we're experiencing?
Yeah, I mean, just starting from the latter, the climate, you know, the fracking, the I think it's the final try of the old thoughts that are just trying to hold on to something. And I think we see Mother Nature just shaking it off, saying no more, you know, this earthquake, that volcano. So from that side of it, in terms of the human side, I mean, that requires a little more than a simple sentence answer. It requires research, because when we look outside of ourselves at something that we think isn't good, we label it and judge it. And I've listened to interviews of people who lost their jobs over the last few years due to the Wall Street crisis. And these people were saying this was really a great thing for them, because now they're doing volunteer work. It's other people said it brought them back to their life purpose, to finding their true self. I was pleasantly shocked to hear that, and I wasn't expecting it. I have not talked with 10 people, so I don't want to speak for them. With the other experience that I've had personally is talking with people who are the most impoverished people in India, no electricity and things like that. And they are some of the happiest people on the planet, and I've seen that in Jamaica. So another thing is people talk about people, well, I guess that's enough of an example. So the people that I've experienced directly, had contact with, who we would group into, isn't that terrible? They don't seem to think it's terrible. So I think it's, you know, a lot of people do like to bring that up, but the answer I have for them is go talk with these people, interview them or listen to interviews, and then you'll have an answer, or at least a good part of the answer.
So that one of those that you're talking about is something like how you personally experience your reality versus what you might think it's about.
Yeah, it's your, I mean, the big thing is our belief systems, and that's what really has to change at this point. You know, if we think being living outdoors is a bad thing, then we're going to view those people in a bad way. Oh, isn't that too bad? But people, and again, I haven't talked to 10 people, so I don't want to presume anything. But I just last year bought a teepee tent. I live out there in the summertime. I love it. And if I could live outside more of the year, I would. It connects me more to nature. You know, people look at my life and say, this guy, he eats dandelions off of his lawn, and they think there's something wrong with me. And I think it's the most miraculous thing in the world. I don't have to cultivate, I don't have to garden for that. Mother gives it to me just at this time of the year. I need it. It's all about perspective. It's all about the cultural and ancestral belief patterns that we've been indoctrinated with. And that's what we need to examine to break out of those suffering cycles and into the cycle that it's okay to have joy in your life.
Well, you have so many excellent books, and I'm looking at your newest book, 21 Days to Freedom, and Forgiving and Loving Your Body, Mind, and Soul. And the cover is, basically a child-type drawing.
Right.
So what inspires you to use that as a cover versus your, very serious cover on some of your other older books?
Well, it's about being childlike, isn't it? You know, it's celebrating life and accepting yourself. And I chose to draw the pictures myself. A lot of people get a lot of joy from my pictures. I don't claim to be a Rembrandt, but I claim to paint in joy. And it's like I tell people, I don't always sing in key, but I always sing in joy. So it's about accepting who you are and being in the moment. You know, if you play with kids and you sing to them and they're happy, they're not sitting there with a greeting card telling you you missed this note or that note. This is not, you know, living life is not America's Got Talent, you know. So,
well, let's talk about this book. What inspired you to write this new book, 21 Days to Freedom?
Well, it's really interesting. I've been in a writing group for the last couple of, I guess a year. And during that time, a friend of mine wound up in prison due to his drinking problems, challenges. And I went to visit, and they asked me to send them a book on something that would help them. So on the way home, I just said, well, I don't want to send them a book. I'll write them a book. And then I just expanded it, you know, so 21 Days to Freedom is how to prepare himself so he will feel free whether he's in prison or out of prison. And then, of course, I expanded it into, because everybody who's not in their joy is bound, imprisoned in their own lack of joy. So that's really what inspired it.
Oh, that's very interesting. So that freedom actually has sort of that double entendre of having referring to this friend who was actually in prison.
Literally. And then you have Henry David Thoreau, the great poet, who, when he was alive in the 1800s, he went to jail for not paying his taxes. And he said, I feel more free in prison than most people I know who live in the world. So it's all about our thoughts. It's all about, you know, just before our consciousness, the thing we can really address is our thought patterns. And it's a great exercise. It's the one muscle that we don't really exercise at the spa yet.
Well, in your book, what are some of the tips that you give people as they move through something that could actually be considered a 21-day process?
Yeah, you know, in 21 days, they find that new neural pathways are created. So if you start something new, like exercise, the first day, second day, you have Charlie horse, then it gets better and better. In the same way, when you try a new pattern in life, it takes 21 days for it to become second nature as the neural pathway develops. So I've made this a very fun, simple book. Each day it starts with a picture about the day and a little mantra that usually rhymes, like day two says, healthy food, good thought and mood. And then the second page are a couple of sub-mantras. Really simple. It's not a lot of intellectual stuff. It's just inspirational maxims that I've created. And then on the third page are some actual exercises you can do that day, one or more exercises, because we need to, it's more than just reading. We have to actually do things to make something concrete in our life. We need experience beyond theory.
Well, let's talk about some of those specifically.
Okay.
You know, some of the things that you have right in the book, so people would know what to expect.
Well, okay, so then day three is about exercising. If we just start to walk around the block, the blood circulates, our depression lifts, our mood elevates, we feel better. Connect to nature is day four. Connect to nature and pets, good life you'll get. And anybody who has a pet knows, I mean, how wonderful that is. There's all sorts of studies of how the pets keep their owners alive longer. And anybody who goes out to the beach in the summertime, you go to Jones Beach or to go to a lake or a pond or a stream. We have a bird outside this year. I think it's a cat bird, although it doesn't meow as much as it used to, but it makes everybody laugh when it sings. It just uplifts us.
Oh, they make a lot of different noises.
The catbirds?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I figured.
They do.
And I was sitting on the porch, and it landed on a branch at eye level and looked at me and started chirping, and I swear my heart just went wide open to this animal, to this wild animal in nature. So it's a very holistic approach. The book has to do with how you eat, how you think, how you exercise. Another thing we talk about is not, you know, what we call mistakes. Oh, I made a mistake, and then we beat ourselves up for making the mistake. But if we learn from the mistake, we actually grow stronger. A good life makes many mistakes. So if we're not making mistakes, really, we're not trying. And we're this culture, we're such a fear-based culture, as we talked about before. We're afraid to make mistakes. We're afraid to go outside. We're afraid to eat something from our garden. I showed somebody some string beans, and I picked one from the garden, and I gave it to them as I eat it. And they looked at me like I offered them, you know, peroxide or arsenic or something.
Right, they're more comfortable eating something that's processed from a fast food restaurant, which is highly toxic, instead of something that just grows from the earth.
Yeah, and so we have to have, you know, adventure. There's no more adventure in our life. It's become so sanitized. We're afraid to make mistakes. We're afraid of everything. We're afraid of our shadows. And then it's really just turning anything negative in our life into a positive. It's basically when I talked about what keeps us not free, or what frees us is our thoughts, and what keeps us bound is our thoughts. And there's really only two types of thoughts: freeing thoughts, loving thoughts, harmony thoughts. That's all one type: expansion, open, and doubt, fear, etc., blame, lack of gratitude. All those are the closing, the imprisoning thoughts. And all we have to do, and this book helps us mentally exercise, to start to get ourselves to allow our thoughts to be. Our thoughts are the key to our life, to our freedom, to our love. So through the book, we learn how to open up our lives again, how to be free. Again, means not necessarily in this lifetime, but at some point there was a golden age before this, 26,000 years ago. So.
Well, this is just beautiful. I love looking at the picture. And we're going to take just a little short hiatus, a break, right here on Progressive Radio Network. And you are listening to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network, Gary Knowles Network, where you can listen to any show, any time of day, whenever you want, which is so great, by going to our archives. We will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
Progressive Radio Network, your premier progressive radio station.
Philosophy Talk is changing to a new time every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Ken Taylor and John Perry discuss both contemporary and classical philosophical theories and apply it to problems we face every day with a lighthearted and laugh-out-loud approach. Philosophy Talk, every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello, I'm Carol Brier, host of Community Currency, connecting people, ideas, important information, nurturing human renaissance, seeking to transform disintegrating empire into healthy, problem-solving, creative, evolutionary, peaceful communities. To hear us, listen every Thursdays, 5 to 6 p.m. on Progressive Radio Network.
Is a state of emergency. No, it's not. It's more of a state of urgency. I'm Danny Schechter. I'm your news dissector. I'm on the radio Fridays at 1 p.m. right here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, offering a different narrative to the news, challenging what we're hearing, what we're seeing, what we're reading, offering another way of understanding what's going on. Join me online on MediaChannel.org and join me here on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com Fridays at 1 p.m. Be there or be square.
Hello, I'm Dr. Helen Caldicott, and you can hear my program, If You Love This Planet, right here on the Progressive Radio Network every Sunday at 3 p.m. Please join me as I interview a huge variety of special guests from around the world about a range of topics, including the health of the planet and prescriptions for survival. So, if you do love this planet, tune in to the Progressive Radio Network every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Don't miss out on Dr. Michio Kaku's weekly show, Explorations. Dr. Kaku is the only scientist with his own nationally syndicated radio show. Explorations is the program that explains complex physics with an accessible approach. So take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss topics ranging from space exploration to stem cell research.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can find out more at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And today we are interviewing Swami Narayan Tirtha, also known as Cowboy Swami Shaman. And he has written several books. We were just talking about his newest, 21 Days to Freedom. But I would say, Swami, that you are actually most well-known for your book, Ayurveda Encyclopedia, which is really the preeminent work, and we find it everywhere. I see your book in every bookstore. I see it in on college campuses, such as the naturopathic college campuses, wow, chiropractic colleges. I mean, it is really a widespread work.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that, and I like the feedback. I don't really know where it all is. I just want to say that my name is Swami Sadashiva Tirtha. My guru and my ashram name is Swami Narayan Tirtha.
So okay,
people
thank
are
you
getting
for that.
Confused. But if you got Cowboy Swami Shaman, that's good enough.
Now, that's a newer name for you. So,
well,
so how did you evolve into the cowboy part? I see you always have your cowboy hat on now, too.
Yeah, well, you know, I was recognized as a Swami back by my Guruji back in 91, I think. And when I was in Ecuador in the rainforest and in the city, I met the shamans, and two of the shamans there recognized me as a shaman. When I moved up here, upstate New York, the sun is so bright that a simple baseball can keep the glare out of your eyes. So I was looking for a hat with a brim, and I was looking for like a sombrero, but I couldn't find one. And then I saw the cowboy hats, and then I happened to see one in orange, and I said, "Oh, this is perfect. Ask and you shall receive." And so I got that, and then I was talking to a friend, and they were joking. They said, "So you're a cowboy and a swami and a shaman. We'll have to call you Cowboy Swami Shaman." So that's the joke, and it keeps it light, you know, it keeps the whole thing light.
Right, it feeds into the peace and paradise and joy theme that
exactly.
You love to promote.
Exactly.
Now, tell us about the readings that you're involved in doing in terms of helping people with their life.
Well, I started years ago with teaching meditation and yoga back in the 70s, and then Ayurveda and Vedic astrology in the 80s, and then Vedic feng shui and vastu sastra. Most recently, last summer actually, I was looking around at the world, and I saw so much of the suffering that you had brought up earlier. And I said, it's just not changing fast enough. And if there's this much suffering, and if I'm not able to do anything about it, what am I here for? So I had this conversation with God. Every once in a while, I'll have one of these frustration conversations where I sound rather presumptuous. And I said, I want to be able to heal people instantly and permanently. And then all of a sudden I started getting messages. I started to see somebody would say something, and I'd see that I said, "That's not serious," or "You're healed," or I didn't know how to replicate it. And then all of a sudden this guy emailed me, and he's got a Chinese energetics approach, and I studied up on that. I read a book or two, and I was able to see how to systematize what was coming to me naturally. And then I started saying to people, let's test this out, because somebody was on, I was doing a consultation on Skype, and this woman had, she started a clutch at her heart, and she made a funny face. I said, "What's the matter?" She says, "Oh, it's my heartburn, my hiatal hernia." So I said, "All right, let me see if I can do something about that." And I sent her the energy, and it disappeared. She said, "Well, what'd you do? So then I started testing it out and doing my own internet radio show. I have groups. People would call in and ask for blessings, and the group who was listening would just, we take 2-3 minutes of silence on the radio and send that person blessings and any kind of psychic or intuitive things that we would get, we would share that. And people started healing. The first week, the woman called back after the first week, and she said, "I called last week with hepatitis C, and I went back to the doctor yesterday. He says it's completely gone, and the only thing I did different was ask for blessings." The best one was a woman had, was a survivor of leukemia. And about 6 months prior to our conversation, it came back, and the doctors couldn't do anything. So we did a blessing for her on the air. And literally 6 days later, she emailed me and says she went to the doctor. The doctor says there's not a trace of the leukemia in her. So it was about the group, that all of us have this gift. We go back to our thoughts and our intentions. What we think comes reality. So when we send love and blessings to somebody and we see them healthy, or we see where the block is, and we just imagine it better, or whatever each person does, people do get better. It's energy healing. And we did it live in live groups in town in Oneonta over the winter as well. So that's the most exciting thing, that we can, all of us can have this ability to heal one another and ourselves, to see our energy, to see our energy blocks, to get messages. We've had people who never did a psychic reading in their life was getting psychic messages for their friends in the groups, and they would be validated by that person. They said, "Yes, my mother does have that, or this or that." So it's something that as we go into the 2012, the celebration, the paradise, everybody's going to have all these great gifts. They're just natural. They've just been closed down to us.
And then there's so many ancient studies. And as we move into the new times, how do some of these more ancient studies like Ayurveda, Hinduism, Buddhism, and the Judeo-Christian concepts as well, how do they fit in to this evolution and transformation?
That's really a really, really great question, Ellen, because there's a lot of new information coming to me and to many people. And yet, what about the old stuff? And a lot of the people are saying that during this transformation, hold on to or find an ancient tradition of some sort to stick to ground you during this transition. I think in my own case, I know that I have to eat Ayurvedically to feel good and to stay healthy. I know that my meditations given to me by my Guruji are still the best thing in the world. It takes me off of everything relative, and I have pure consciousness experience. So I think it's a combination. We take the best of the ancient, we drop off the dogma, and we pick up the new information where the dogma leaves off. And I think the combination of the two, of the real ancient, letting go of the dogma and picking up the new information, I think that's the way to go into the new age.
Well, let's define what you mean by dogma, because it seems to me so many of them are very close. I'll just say an example. Let's say in Islam they talk about people having their head covered, and in Judaism it's really the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
With yarmulke and in the more traditional Jewish segments, women are not allowed outside without their head covered either. The same kind of thing.
Same in Hinduism. Women are usually, traditionally, they didn't go out at all, and if they did go out, they were covered up. The monks wear covered heads, so that's why I wear my hat. I think, when something helps us, we use it, and if a rule becomes too encumbering, we don't use it. You know, I think each of us...
Is each person who is studying a particular tradition free to make those choices on their own without sidestepping the rules or whatever? Is that what you would say about dogma?
Dogma is something that, there's two types of dogma. Dogma is that which isn't really true, and I haven't given an example of that yet. I'll think about that. But there's another dogma, small d dogma, which I think is something that doesn't work for you in the moment and causes you a lot of grief. Even if it's ultimately good for you in the moment, you're not ready for it. It's like yoga. Okay, here's an example of the yoga pose. It said in the original scriptures for yoga, there's these so many poses, but you can invent your own poses. Now, for me, I do yoga when my body says, I need this, do this. And sometimes it's a real pose, sometimes it's a modified pose, like the warrior pose, but then I make it my own to address where my body's calling for the attention. Now, if somebody says to me, that's not the way to do a warrior pose, and I try to do it their way, I'm not listening to my inner body. That's a form of dogma. Just because it works. Yeah, just because it works doesn't, for you, it doesn't mean it works for everybody. The same thing with you know, certain types of yoga standards, forceful yoga, aerobic yoga. Some people need that, but not everybody needs that. And we can look at Ayurveda as a perfect example. There's no one way to eat healthy. It's the way you are. What is your body constitution? If you're mostly air or vata, then I don't care if 1,000 people eat a raw food diet. If you eat it, you're going to feel sick and look sick, and your life's going to be really miserable after a while.
I've certainly found that to be true, too, and you can see a similar pattern with Chinese diagnostic techniques. If someone is, let's say, very yin and they go to a strictly raw food diet, they are usually going to suffer terribly and their health condition will not improve. In fact, it will get even worse. So, you know, we do see that.
Right. And then, so dogma is really a relative term. Respect your elders. Okay, respect the wise people. Okay, but if the wise people or the elders are destroying our economy or destroying our planet, then you have to question that. So I think dogma is a relative term. There's a wonderful joke about this. There's a story of a guru a long time ago in India, and he had a pet cat, and he played with that cat. But at night, when he would talk about the Bhagavad Gita, the cat would get really frisky and disrupt the lecture, so he would tie the cat up to a tree. And then that went on every night he gave the readings. And when he passed on, the next guru took over and tied the cat up to the tree so it wouldn't interfere with the lecture. And then at some point down in history, they said, let's codify our rules. And the first rule was, when you give a Gita talk, you have to tie a cat to a tree.
That's funny, because they saw that he did that.
He did that, you have to do that. So we have to question everything. You know, I think the answer is what is dogma is, or is another way to say what works for you and what works for you now. You know, there's a time for everything, and there's a time to be cautious, and there's a time to be adventurous. And every person has, as long as you're sincere enough to yourself, you'll figure things out. If you listen to your body, if you listen to nature, you'll hear what you need. And you'll learn, you know, very quickly. If you stop blaming everybody, you know, I mean, that's one of the things in my book, in 21 Days to Freedom. If we stop blaming other people for what's going on in our life and take responsibility for it, we'll see that we can make a change in our life. If we're not happy with something, don't blame that person. Oh, that person made me sad. No, you let them make you feel sad, you know. Oh, that person gets me sick. Well, you don't eat well. If you ate well, you wouldn't feel so sick. So that's one thing right there about dogma. What works for you? Be sincere. Listen to your heart. Listen to your intuition. Listen to the speech of nature. The wind tells you things. You know, everything. If we're sincere enough, everyone is our spiritual teacher. Everything is our spiritual teacher.
Well, what about something very specific? Because you really have a lot of very specific information on topics of which you do talk about on peaceandparadise.com and in all your books. And something that people may not have heard about is something called Vastu.
Okay.
Now, they may have heard the word Feng Shui, but Vastu is basically a very similar teaching.
Yeah, the people that some of the well-known people in Feng Shui have actually said that Feng Shui came out of Vastu Shastra. Vastu means structure, and Shastra is the rules. And basically, Vastu Shastra is the laws of nature that apply to structures. So whether it's your home, if it's your office, if it's your factory, if it's your shop, each structure is a sacred living entity. It's a body in and of itself, like your physical body. And your heart is in the center of your body, in the center of your chest, and the center of the structure is the most spiritual place. So they say, don't put anything heavy there. Don't put a pillar. Don't put a dresser. Leave the center open. So that's one example, and you can just try that. If you have a room that's all stuffy, just clear out the center of it, and you will feel better. I mean, that's my experience. When I've redone my floors and I've had everything in the middle of the room, I started to feel all cluttered. And as I moved it to the sides, and I felt I could work again much better. So there's a one simple example. How you sleep, if you put your head to the east, you'll get spiritual energy at night. If you put your head to the south, you'll get more restful energy. There are conflicting stories and theories, so you always have to test them out and see which works for you. Some say it's not good to go to the north. Some say it is good to go to the north. I go with it's good to go to the south, not the north.
What do you mean by good to go to?
Good to put your head in that direction. Have your pillow up in the north or have your pillow in the south. So if you have your head on a pillow in the southern direction and your feet in the northern direction, the theory is you're supposed to get more restful sleep. And if you're not sure, try it to the north and see which works better for you. You can put your head to the west or to the east.
What about the idea of a main door? Because I find people are very confused about what the main door even is. Like, what's the difference if you're in a house versus if you live in an apartment house and the main door to the building is the front door, but then you go upstairs and take an elevator and go into your personal door?
Yeah. Well, one of the nice things about the more recent discussions in Vastu is originally it was very hard and dry. If there was a problem, spend a lot of money to get it fixed, tear down that wall, put up a new door, things like that. Since that was back when I first started studying Vastu back in the 90s, shortly thereafter they started coming out with better books that said, well, here's simple, inexpensive remedies you can do, putting up mirrors, putting up wind chimes. So you can't control your door. Ideally, you'd enter the door on the east side, just like teepee tents. Have your door on the east of the house. Now, if you can't, there are remedies that you can do. You ideally have your fire, your stove in the southeast corner, because that's the fire direction. Now, if you live in an apartment, if you rent, you can't do that unless it happened to be there. So there are remedies for that. And a very simple universal remedy for anything is just put God pictures up all around your walls. You know, pictures of whatever, you know, deities, angels, Jesus, Shiva, Buddha, whatever you like. And that's like the ultimate universal healing, balancing. You could always just put water pictures on the wall wherever the fire is, because if you have fire in the wrong section, you don't want it to burn that section. So those are some, you know, opposite elements. But the simplest one that everybody can use is just pick your favorite deity or god and put pictures up all over your house.
And that offsets some of the placement issues. But I know that you actually can give someone a reading, and I like the way you make it so modern and computer accessible. Like, you actually have instructions about drawing your room, sort of like a little outline of what the room looks like, and put where everything is. The furniture, and then you can make very, very specific recommendations accordingly.
Right. Rather than fly me out to your home for a couple of hours, you know, you're paying all that upfront cost, just draw the boundaries of the house or the room, and we can work it out that way. And it's really nice. I'll give you some examples. I used to, when I was still living on Long Island, and I was writing a lot of blogs when the internet was pretty new still, back in late 90s, early 97, I guess, beginning 2000. And all of a sudden one day I had a writer's block, and I never had a writer's block, and I couldn't write. And I had just started studying Vastu, and it says, well, if you can't write, you should face east. And I turned my desk to the east, and all of a sudden all the writing flowed again. Another really good thing is if you're a boss and you have your own shop, you should have your office in the southwest corner, if at all possible, because the spiritual energy comes in from the northeast and comes through the angle to the southwest. So you're getting all that spiritual energy is coming at you if you sit in that corner. So if you're the boss, you need the most energy and the most clarity to do the best job possible to help people in whatever your job is. So the northeast, and some of this is interesting because it sort of is a little bit at odds with the ego building things.
Like, why is that?
Well, the egos are all about the sun, and they say you want to have a south-facing slope to live on, and because that way you get the most sun on your house, on your property.
Well, that's true if you're going to put up a solar panel.
Exactly, and for sunlight. But what's unseen is the invisible rays of the sun in the east, and the first few hours of the morning is the most spiritual energy that comes in on you. So if you have windows in your east, if you have a slope to the east or the northeast, then you're getting that spiritual energy on your property. So it's more of an unseen benefit, whereas the ego is more of a observable approach. So you have to play around with that and see how it works for you, what's practical and what's not practical.
And also you've put so much time into developing very nice balancing herbal formulas that I know have lots of herbs in them and minimal additives.
Yeah, no, other than natural binders, it's all herbs. There's nothing man-made there other than the tablet. I started out, it was like the third or the fourth Ayurvedic herb company in the country back in 88. I started with just bulk herbs. At the time, I really didn't see simple formulas that addressed the main issues of the day. So I got a vision to create my own company, which I did. I'm still very happy with the basic formulas. One of the great ones is not indigestible. It's a pain oil called Mahanarat.
I see the oil. Yes, the oil is lovely. So how would someone use that? Just put it on?
Well, for arthritis, bursitis, joint pains, lower back pains. I've even had people with multiple sclerosis use it. It took them about a week of use before it kicked in, but then it would take their pain away for 2 hours. In some cases, I've had people say the pain went away all day. And it doesn't have a smell like Tiger Balm does. So that's another thing people like about it.
Some of the herbs that are in there?
Oh, goodness, you got me on that one. There's literally, it's a traditional formula, so there's literally 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 herbs in there. And I know it's based in the sesame oil base, but I don't remember the herbs offhand.
Right, there's many in there. I'm sure Boswellia and other things that actually are good and move through the skin.
Right, and we absorb more through our skin than we do through what we drink. So like if you have a water filter to not take in whatever's in the water, you also want a water filter on your shower because you're getting more water from your shower than you are from your faucet.
Is there any kind of water filter that you feel are better than others?
You know, I'm not really up on that. I've heard of something called a Jupiter. Some people I know really went for that. There's something very interesting. There are these magnesium oxide tablets or pills or marbles that you use them over and over and over again. And magnesium oxide is really the, it's going to sound a little funny, but it's the main component of cow manure. That's not what this is, meaning cow manure, but it's, cow manure in India, if you use it in India, traditionally they would smear it on the floor and on the walls, and it was considered holy. And several decades ago, when in the Bhopal Union Carbide chemical explosion, when people got sick there, the people who were smearing their walls and floors with cow manure, the chemicals didn't come into their house and affect them. And in Chernobyl, when there was the nuclear reaction explosion or meltdown, the people who were doing this thing called Agni Hotra, which is a fire ceremony using dried cow dung, organic cow dung, it eliminated the radiation from their air, from their water, from their plants, from their food that they were growing. So also magnesium oxide cow manure is what was used to make the old temples in India and China. And now it's available again in man-made in this country, and I'm just experimenting with it this summer. But it's that magnesium oxide that draws, not only prevents the radiation from coming at you, but it also transmutes that energy. So if there's chemtrails or if there's radiation, I don't know if they're using it in Japan, but there's certainly enough information on the web how people use it in Chernobyl. So anyway, this magnesium oxide are little pills, and my friend is using it, and I want to get some to try it out. And you put it in the water, and it takes away, it takes away all the chemicals and any possible radiation or whatever is in the
water.
Well,
that sounds like an interesting thing to look into, as is many of the things that you shared with us. It's amazing, but we're actually out of time.
Okay.
And I want to tell people that they certainly can find you. And where would you say the best place to look in terms of websites, since you have so many?
Yeah, peaceandparadise.com, PEACEANDPARADISE. And that has my books and my courses and everything else.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And until next time, this is Ellen Kamai at Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and I am The Natural Nurse. Until next time, we are wishing you the best, and stay healthy.